right, another day and a whole lot of news here. There's no slowing down. I'm really beginning to think that even perhaps I don't understand how bad this is going to get. And I'm pretty good at least drawing a line, a circle around the limits of something in my own mind, my own projection. Henry knows better than I ever will. But this is really not looking good at all. The CDC has issued a warning, and I mentioned this earlier. Dr. Redfield said that unless people follow the guidelines, mask, distance, washing hands, etc., we may have the worst fall in U.S. public health history. That's coming up in just a few weeks, right? States, Georgia, widespread expanding coronavirus there. And then you get incredible things like Wisconsin government agency mandates face mask use for virtual Zoom meetings over the internet. You're supposed to wear masks for Zoom meetings. Come on. Come on. That's what makes grist for those who would laugh at the whole idea of wearing face masks. That's asinine. America's obesity epidemic threatens effectiveness of any coronavirus vaccine. It's an interesting concept. Probably true. 44 here. Coronavirus infects 44% of Seneca Foods employees at Wisconsin plant. Well, first of all, I'm surprised that the liberal left hasn't screamed and yelled that Seneca is a racist name for a food plant. But beside that, when you start to think that all of these major food plants can be hit the same way, 44% here, and shut down or slowed down, and you've got a food crisis right there in the making. It's true. Lots going on. Henry, welcome back. Let's get to business here. A lot happening.
Well, it's good to be back, Jeff. And, activity is definitely picking up. I think, the potential for the fall is actually worse than, you realize or have indicated. And,
see, now for you to say that is very concerning. I'm not surprised, but I mean, we've been doing this for 8 months now, since January right. the 8th, and I thought I had a pretty good idea, but this is what you're suggesting, what you just said, you know, it's bad and going to be worse than imaginable, I think. It's bad.
Right, right. And part of the reason it's going to be as bad as I think it's going to be is because not a whole lot is being done to control it. I mean, the U.S. is already the worst in the world as far as deaths and cases are concerned. That's real cases. It's not due to excessive testing. In fact, testing has been declining lately because it's so bad that some people are just foregoing testing because it takes too long to get the results, or you have to wait in line too long to submit a sample. And so number one, it's going to be bad because we're going to be flying blind again. We haven't really done anything to really do adequate testing. And then it's going to be bad because the effort to get the schools going and not really having the testing to track the virus as they should. And then there's also efforts to start the football season up, and the conferences that are planning to go ahead with the football season are located precisely where the largest concentration of COVID cases are, in the southeast and south. And you kind of get all these things together, and it just seems like, I mean, I had mentioned this the other day, that it was almost like the policies that are being put in place are designed to guarantee that there's going to be a significant pandemic. You know, getting the students back in school, getting fall sports going, and having masks optional, and, you know, basically getting a reasonable percentage of the population in certain areas that kind of still aren't sure that this is really a pandemic or really is that lethal or have long-term effects. And then the president saying, you know, the children aren't going to die from this. Football players are big and strong. And he, you know, mixed messages all over the place. And some people are going to pay attention to the virus, and some are essentially going to ignore it and mock people that wear masks and say this isn't a problem. And then, you know, pandemics have a history of getting worse, going through multiple waves. The Herald wave is usually the mildest because it's not everywhere simultaneously. It's just kind of popping up and the virus is feeling its way around. And by the time, 6 months to a year later, the virus is pretty well adapted and then can strike the entire population simultaneously. And then things just get out of control because there's too many people, and the healthcare can't really handle it. The care isn't as well as it could be when it's at lower numbers. Healthcare workers get infected. You know, everything gets basically overwhelmed by the numbers. And that's just the general cases. The specifics are really bearing all that out. You know, as you recall, the big outbreak in the spring, it was fairly limited as the number of locations that were effective. Mm-hmm. It was concerning enough to have a lockdown, but the U.S. just many of the states and governors really ignored the CDC's recommendations. They didn't, get their 14 days of declining cases. They just decided that, well, it's time to open things up again. Trump sent out his tweets for various states to free Virginia and Wisconsin, I think mm-hmm. Michigan. You know, happens to be in Democratic states, that he said, free them and open them up. You know, there are demonstrations, not a lot of people, but, you know, bringing guns to the capitals and saying, you know, open up the states. And the U.S. performance was abysmal. I mean, they flattened the curve, but it ended up, you know, flattening at around 20,000 cases a day. That certainly isn't low enough to do contact tracing. That's certainly not enough to get things out of control. And then when you got 20,000 cases a day and then you start to open things up, then the numbers go up. And it's not like in Europe where they go from, you know, 20 cases to 50 cases. They go from 20,000 cases to 70,000 cases in the U.S. So, I mean, 70,000 cases a day, and then things kind of leveled off a little bit, and now it's in the 55,000 case range. And the deaths are climbing. The Worldometer did hit 170,000 deaths in the U.S. today. And the New York Times just came out with an article that said, that's not the real number. That if you take a look at excess deaths in the U.S., and I've gone through this a few times, but just briefly, it doesn't have anything to do with the diagnosis. All it does is count death certificates that were filed, it notes when they were filed and where they were filed, and it plots those deaths in the U.S. by the week with the location. The CDC's got a map up. You can kind of pick out your state, and it'll show you a 3-year history of excess deaths in that state. And it's got a little line just above what the historical numbers are, and if it gets above that line, it puts a little star, and it's an excess death. Mm. And it's not just showing you it was excess in excess that week. It actually shows you the number of deaths, and it shows how much above the line is there. And you can see that those excess deaths started in April. And for the whole country, and it went up, and then it started to come down, and now it's going back up again. And if you look at these states, particularly the ones in the South, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a little bit of delay because the death certificates have to be filed, and it might take 10 days, 2 weeks, and then they're not that even. They don't really get caught up until 4 to 6 weeks after the fact. If you go back 4 to 6 weeks, you get a pretty accurate number. If they don't even list the numbers for the last 2 weeks because they know they're not complete. Uh-huh. And then it gets updated every week. I think it's on Thursday. They put up a new week, and they kind of update the numbers. And as you get a little further away from the current date, and you allow all these numbers to be updated, you can see the curves, and they're quite striking because it does go back 3 years, and you can see that they don't normally have excess deaths. That on a mm-hmm. bad flu season, they'll have excess deaths in January or so. You don't have excess deaths in April, May, June, July, August. Those months are mm-hmm. never get excess deaths, and literally there's excess deaths for every week since April or May in some of these states. And it, even when it went down, it never got below that line. It just got close to the line. And now it's going back up again. And so the article in the New York Times today says that the U.S. has got, since things started to take off like in April or so, that there haven't been 160,000 deaths in the U.S. or 170,000 deaths in the U.S. There's been 211,000 deaths in the U.S. So the actual number is 40,000-50,000 cases above what right. has been reported as being confirmed. And if you look at individual states, you can kind of see that their numbers seem to be a little bit off. And that's one of the reasons I've been sending in the daily updates, taking the numbers that the state reports to see how those look. And you get this pattern that, like I reported, the numbers go down over the weekend, and Mondays are also low because they're really measuring Sunday numbers, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday they go up, and then they start going back down again. So they follow that typical pattern. But some of the states have looked kind of suspicious. One of the states that's highly suspect is Texas. And Texas started out kind of low on the testing. They really weren't reporting that many cases. Yeah. They weren't doing that many tests. And then things started to pick up, and they boosted up the testing, and the numbers started to go up pretty dramatically. And but if you look at the website, even the numbers they're reporting just aren't being reported the same way as the CDC recommends and as other states have adopted, because the cases are in listed as confirmed as well as probable. The probable are the ones that usually the patient dies before they're tested. So that they'll say cause of death, COVID, on the death certificate because mm-hmm. that person was in contact with other people that had the virus and they had symptoms, but they ended up dying at home and they didn't, you know, they might have called 911 and they died before the ambulance
sure,
got there.
Sure. Got it.
But they're listed and they're probable because, you know, not because they're dead. They're probable because of the circumstances surrounding the death.
Do we know what the percentage of probables out of the actual total of dead attributed to coronavirus, what would the percentage of probables be? Any guess on that?
Most of the websites list both numbers. They list confirmed and they list probable. And some of them combine them for you. Others combine them and then list how many of those are probables. And the probables are about 10 to 15% of the total. So the vast majority are confirmed. But it's another 10 to 15% higher if you throw in the probables. And the CDC said that you should really combine them. If you want to list them separately, you can do that. But really, if you're going to compare how many cases you've got in one state versus another state, you know, for comparison values, you do the total because virtually all of the ones that are probable really would be confirmed if they had been tested. And that's going to be a more accurate representation if you include the probables. And the CDC knows what the number of deaths are, and they can see the pattern of the deaths, and they can see these increases, and they can do the same calculation the New York Times did, and they know that even if they take the confirmed and the probables and add them together, they're still less than the number of excess deaths, because they're still not getting all of them, even if they include the probables. And Texas doesn't include the probables. So they list confirmed, but they don't tell you what the probables are. So the numbers that typically go into these tallies, for Texas, they're probably 15% below what they really are. Well, not what they really are, but 15% below the numbers that other states are reporting. So Texas is already, you know, built into their reporting on their tally page that they really have, if they threw the probables in, they would be 10 to 15% higher than what they're reporting. But just about every other state does the combination. So the numbers that I'm reporting are the combination. And some of the states don't even break them out. They just said total cases and total deaths. And they've added the probables with the confirmed. So Texas has always been a little bit suspect, but in spite of that, they are still up there. But their testing has dropped pretty dramatically in the last few weeks. And so the numbers they're reporting are just a fraction of the number. I mentioned this the other day that the CDC wants you to be below 5% positive. So they want you to do enough testing so that you'll have a good enough idea of where the virus is. And to do that, you really should have enough testing so that the positives are only about 5% of the total. So you're testing quite a few people that turn out to be negative. Some of those people, you know, basically say they were in contact with a positive. Some of those people just want the test. I mean, the test generally doesn't cost anything. And so they say they're a contact or a positive, so they may not have symptoms and they get tested anyway. They may misdiagnose their symptoms and they get tested anyway. But the CDC wants you to get that number down to 5% or so. And Texas, on average, currently, is at 25%. So they're just picking up a small fraction of the total, because they should be doing 2, 3, 4 times the amount of testing that they're actually doing.
All right.
And if they did that,
so, but that's not going to happen.
Right, but I'm just telling. Well, I know it doesn't. It doesn't matter whether they test or not, as far as understanding what is out there. That I'm telling you what they're doing and why the number they're reporting is not 10 or 15% below the actual value. But the number that they're reporting is probably half or a quarter of the actual value. So when they say they're getting 8,000 cases a day, they're probably getting 20,000 cases a day.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you're looking at this number and you're seeing that the entire country is doing 50 to 55,000 cases, if Texas had would do the correct amount of testing, they would see that they alone would be reporting 20,000 cases a day. And Florida's not that far behind. Florida's kind of doing the same thing. I think they're in the neighborhood of 12 or 15% positive. They're not quite as dramatic as Texas, but Florida's underreporting their cases also. And so the number of actual cases out there is significantly higher than the number that are being reported. But even with these lower numbers because of the reduced testing, they still end up for the country in the neighborhood of 50 to 55,000 cases, and they still end up with more than 1,000 deaths every day. And Trump has been making a number of statements that provide a little bit of insight as to what he's doing. I mean, as I've indicated, Trump holds a briefing every day. Most of the briefing is supposed to be a briefing on the state of COVID, but he really doesn't talk that much about COVID. He doesn't have any scientists there. He trotted out the guy who does MRIs and talks a lot on Fox News. You know, Anthony Fauci doesn't say his name anymore. He's not there. Deborah doesn't say her name anymore. She's not there. Basically, nobody from the task force is there. I mean, Pence isn't even there.
I mean, Jerry Kushner is
not there either.
There's
nobody there. But the only person talking is the Donald. And he's not really talking. Most of the time, he's reading. And he's reading his text. And I said, it really looks like he's seeing this for the first time, based on how he's reading it. But I stand corrected. He really isn't reading it for the first time. That's just how he reads. Because I just saw a side-by-side of Trump reading his report, and it's really the same the same cadence, the same words. They did it side by side. The only thing that was different, and one of them he's got a red tie on, the other one's got a pink tie on, but everything else is identical. The words are identical. They come out at exactly the same time. He's doing a duet. It's basically Trump and Trump.
Well, yes.
Talking the same talk. And and so he isn't reading it for the first time. It just sounds like he's reading it for the first time because he read the exact same thing the day before. So, he doesn't say a whole lot about the pandemic. And B, he says the same thing over and over again. And C, he uses obsolete data that he's cherry-picked, and he keeps saying it over and over, even though it isn't relevant. I mean, mm-hmm. one of the issues, as I mentioned, is the death rate. The number of deaths has gone back up, and yesterday it was confirmed it did. It was the highest level since May, since towards the end of May was the last time the number got up to 1,500 deaths. And it got that high yesterday. And in spite of the fact that the deaths were the highest they've been in several months, Trump again said today that the deaths are down, I don't know what number he used, 84% or something like that. So
well,
he's using the number.
Did he
that
say
was
which
valid.
Planet? No, he didn't. He didn't.
Well, no, it was a time frame. The numbers did go down about a month ago, and the explanation for the decline
time shifting
was due to the fact that the earlier outbreaks had pretty much run their course, and they weren't contributing that many deaths. And the emerging outbreaks in the South and the West were producing cases, and they were filling up the ICU, but the patients hadn't died yet. So there was a low where there was only like 500 deaths today. So it did get down to a low number of 500. And it had been as high as 2,500, 3,000 deaths a day. So the deaths were down significantly when it got down to 500 in a few days, especially on the weekend. It might have got down to 400 or even 300 on a weekend in that time frame. But then the numbers went back up again, and the numbers are always higher during the week. And the numbers got above 1,000 a couple of weeks ago. So it's been steadily, during the week anyway, above 1,000. And yesterday it got almost up to 1,500. And it hasn't been that high since May.
Let me,
I had 1,458 yesterday, actually.
All right. Yeah. Let me play this little clip. This is Robert Redfield, the director of the CDC, who made it quite clear that we are facing potentially the worst fall in U.S. public health history if people don't step up. Here's just the beginning of his interview today.
The things that surprised us the most, me the most, was how infectious this virus is. Now, when we saw that it was a coronavirus, I think we were thinking it was going to be more like SARS or MERS, or even with the first cases we identified in the U.S., the first 12 cases that we did contact tracing in over 850 people, we only found two of those contacts that were infected, both spouses. So we had a view that this virus was probably going to be more like MERS and SARS, but we rapidly understood that this is a highly infectious virus. I think that's probably the first thing that surprised us. And the second thing is that probably for a majority of individuals under the age of 50, it's disproportionately asymptomatic. And I think those were the two things that we learned. I wish we had been invited in early. I had asked my counterpart, George Gao, you know, to have us come join him back on January 3rd, to put CDC in to work alongside him to try to understand the outbreak as it was unfolding in Wuhan. You know, I think if we had been able to get in at that time, we probably would have learned quicker than we learned here that, in fact, it is highly infectious, and two, that asymptomatic disease is going to be a critical hallmark of this infection.
A critical hallmark of the infection is the asymptomatic transmissibility of it, the volatility of it. And I listen to this guy, and I think he's sincere, Redfield. I don't think he's blowing smoke. I don't think he's Anthony Fauci. Anyway,
I
go
think
ahead.
He's blowing, I think he is blowing smoke. And he isn't an Anthony Fauci.
No, he's not.
Because you can go back to the interviews back in January, and you didn't have to be in Wuhan to know what was going on with this virus. That as soon as China started exporting the virus, that initially it was to Thailand, and then it was to Japan. And then the paper came out and said, well, if we already got two, and by the time the paper came out, it was three. It was, well, if you've already got three exports, and the exports are coming from Wuhan, and Wuhan metropolitan area has 19 million people, then you can go and figure, well, if you got three out that got out of the country mm-hmm. within a few days of each other, and there was a population of 19 million, and these three didn't have anything to do with each other. They just all came from Wuhan. That you knew that there were already 10 or 20,000 people infected in Wuhan. And if there were 10 or 20,000 people infected in Wuhan, then the virus was clearly easily transmitted human to human, because there's no seafood market that's that big. And like 14 of the cases couldn't be traced to the seafood market. So it was clear that it was in China, and it was clear that it was transmitting human to human, and it was clear that it wasn't SARS, and it was clear that it wasn't MERS. SARS and MERS has never made 10 or 20,000 cases.
Well, they didn't have the polybasic.
Right, right. So the point is that everything pointed to a pandemic. They had mm-hmm. the polybasic cleavage site was published in January 11th, I believe. The sequence was public. January 11th. It showed anybody that can read this sequence knew that there was a polybasic cleavage site. You know, they know where the cleavage site is. They know that a lysine or arginine is a basic amino acid. And if there's three at the cleavage site, and there's only supposed to be one, that's called polybasic. That means there's right. several basic right. amino acids.
Have
there.
We ever? Okay.
And anybody that can count to three knows that three is not equal to one.
You had so made
this,
a remark
this was
that
all known in January. It was right. known in early January.
Well, we talked about it here way back
December,
in the day.
In December, they actually said it was a novel coronavirus, and mm-hmm. that they had, and that they already had 2,000 or 1,200 nucleotides, and they didn't have enough coverage to say exactly how related it was to SARS, but they did have enough data to say that it was a novel coronavirus. And in fact, they knew it not only was a novel coronavirus, but the most close, the closest sequence at GenBank was SARS. It was SARS, but it had a polybasic cleavage site, and it was transmitting much, much quicker than SARS was. So he can say that, oh, it would be nice if the CDC had somebody on site, but the sequences were deposited. They were at CSAD.
Anyone well, you presented CSAD them here when they were first available. I remember.
Could read the sequence. The sequence right. was there. The polybasic cleavage site was there from day one.
You said it.
That
you said it here.
Was there.
Correct.
Right. So the fact that he say, well, yeah, it'd be nice if we had gotten into Wuhan. He sounds like Trump. Trump is exactly the same thing. He's saying, well, you know, this is the China virus, and they could have stopped it if they wanted to. Well, if they could have stopped it if they wanted to, why didn't he stop it when it came to the U.S.? Why is the U.S. the number one country
I understand.
In the world with the virus?
I was only, honestly,
he did.
Henry, alluding to his statement that it was a highly volatile virus. That's all. That's the only
right.
good thing
That's
I heard
right.
him say.
But anybody paying attention knew that in January. If you remember, Yi Guan went to Wuhan. Remember mm-hmm. Yi Guan mm-hmm. from Hong Kong?
Yes.
My kids can tell you what his office phone number is. They can still recite it to this day because he used to call
That's
me
right.
back in mm-hmm. 17 years ago, and they can recite Yi Guan from mm-hmm. Hong Kong. Da, 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 da. I don't know his phone mm-hmm. number, but they do.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to he went to Wuhan, and he went to the hospitals, and he saw how many cases there were. And he said that he was scared, that he's seen outbreaks. He saw SARS. He knows what SARS was. He was in Hong Kong 17 uh-huh. years ago. He saw the outbreak. He actually thought it was H5N1 when he saw the symptoms. And that's why he got interested in it, because he had just identified H5N1 in China from a couple, a family that had visited, and they were in Fujian province, and they came back. The wife actually died in China, and the father died in Hong Kong, and the son survived, and they had those sequences, and those sequences actually had a change for receptor binding domain. But in any event, he saw these, and he said it was a problem. And his concerns were public. I mean, I didn't say that he was concerned because he called me on the phone. I said he was concerned because the media report said he was concerned. And that was discussed, that he saw this as a problem. So the fact that it was a problem was obvious to anyone paying attention in January.
Well, he pounded that message here day after day. You were the first.
Right.
You did it.
And it wasn't inside information. It wasn't somebody picking me up, calling me up on the phone.
No, you got the sequences and you did science. It's very simple.
Right. The sequences were public. It wasn't hard to figure out that you get these results. It's like doing a Google search. You go and you take the sequence, you copy and paste it into the box, and you hit the button that says blast. That whole process takes about 5 seconds. You get the results about 10 seconds later. So in less than a minute, you have the top matches in gene bank. What matched that sequence? And the match was SARS. It was SARS from 2002, 2003. And the civet cats were there, and the second version of it that came up at the end of 2003 were in there, and those were the top matches. So there was no doubt. You knew this in less than a minute, as soon as the sequence was published, that it was a relative of SARS. And then when it started being exported, you knew as soon as it was exported, you had three cases within a couple days of each other, that this virus was already widespread in Wuhan. And all of that came to anybody that had an internet connection. If you had an internet connection, you knew everything I just said, and you could read the sequence.
Or just listen to you. We had it
And like I say, the analysis is as simple as copy, paste, hit blast. It literally takes 10 or 15 seconds to get to the point where you hit blast, and it takes another 10 or 15 seconds before you get the
Henry is talking about hit blast, in case you're not understanding. And that's a technique that's used online. Tell them what it does, Henry.
Well, it's just like a Google search. That basically, you go and you take these letters, and the sequences for SARS-CoV, there's 30,000 letters. And they're all ATGC. There's only four different letters. And you copy that by just highlighting it and hit copy, and you paste it into a box that's at the National Cancer Institute. It's a U.S. government website. This is a government site, anybody in the world can go there. You don't need a password. You don't need to be registered. All you have to do is copy this sequence. It was made public. It was released. It was actually released as DSAT. But if you have a DSAT account, and that you can register for that, and that's free, but that does take registration, and you're not supposed to give the sequence out. If you give the sequence out, they can take away your membership. It's supposed to be, you know, semi-private, but you know, it's a free site, and just about anybody can register, but they have to read the you have to sign, you know, click on an agreement. But in any event, you take the sequence. And it's like a Google search. If you wanted to go ahead and saw something written, and you went and you copied, you know, if you had a page out of a book, you know, a chapter, a paragraph out of a book, if you go and you copy two sentences from that paragraph, and you put that into Google, that you're that an exact match is pretty much going to tell you where that paragraph came from.
Plagiarists, you can find plagiarism in 2 seconds that way.
Right.
Very simple.
And with this, what you're doing, when you're copying the 30,000 letters, and you're not typing them in, you're just highlighting it and copy, and you're pasting it into the box, the search box set up at the NCBI, and then there's a button that says blast, and so that basically takes that sequence and puts it up against literally millions of sequences at GeneBank, which is a public database, and you can restrict it down to coronaviruses if you want.
Okay, I want to jump over to Dr. Fauci here as soon as you're done, so wrap that up.
It'll list the top matches by, you know, the first one, and the default is 100. It'll give you the top 100 matches at GeneBank. And if you do that, A, they'll be all coronaviruses. B, they'll be all beta coronaviruses. And C, they'll all be SARS closely related sequences from the outbreak in 2002-2003. And all you have to do is look at the name, and you can say it says SARS 100 times, because all 100 of them are related to SARS, and you know that that's what is most closely related. And then you could go and look at it and see exactly how related it is, and get the percentage, and see what regions are closer. You can do all kind of analysis, but
so
you know
those,
a SARS coronavirus is in 10 seconds.
Okay. All right. Now, Fauci said, if the U.S. allowed the coronavirus to spread unchecked, which it's almost doing now, in an attempt to try to achieve so-called herd immunity, Dr. Fauci says death would be enormous. Okay?
Correct.
He said it won't work. Now, we all know that so far the understanding is, as I understand it, that antibody protection is good for about 90 days after you've had it and survived it. That means you're a target again after, say, 3 months, just to round it off. You could become reinfected. And we've already established the fact through Dr. Nyman that second time around with this thing is going to be worse in most cases. All right? Your immunity will fade. Your antibodies will basically vanish after 3 months, 4 months. And you get this again, and it's going to be worse. It's not a good virus. It's a bad virus.
And that's exactly what I mean. A lot of your listeners probably still remember the swine flu was only 10 years ago, 11 years ago.
That's when I bought all my N95 masks. Yes.
and that's exactly what happened in the U.S. I mean, it basically was kind of scattered in the spring. Most of the people that were positive were students that went to spring break in Mexico, and they brought it back to their school usually initially, and you get these outbreaks at you know, one school in New York, another school in the Midwest, you know, they would bounce around. The only thing they had in common is they had students that went on spring break and they got sick when they returned.
Flew
and they infected
on commercial
other people
airlines,
there.
Yes, and took it around.
Right. But initially, in the spring, there were enough cases to declare a pandemic because it went into, it took them a little while. It took about three or 4 weeks after they were identified. They were first identified in two children in Southern California, and then, you know, they popped up in Texas right after that, and they popped up here and there, and then all of a sudden they started popping up at schools from people who went on spring break. But it wasn't that widespread in the spring. But it was still there, and I remember it very distinctly because I was paying attention. I told everybody it was going to be in Pittsburgh in the fall, and I had a couple of kids that were in school. I asked them, "Are people coughing yet?" And they had a lot of kids coughing, but you know, it's really not that bad. They don't know what they have. They say they got the crud that's going around, and that's essentially what happened here initially. Initially, people had the virus. They didn't really have enough of the virus to even get a temperature. They weren't going to the doctor. They weren't missing class. They weren't getting diagnosed. They knew that something was going around, but it wasn't that bad. And people weren't even missing school. They were going to school and coughing, but they weren't, they didn't have a fever and they weren't going to the nurse's office. And about 6 weeks later, it took off. It came and people had 100 and something temperature. My daughter had 101 temperature and took her to the doctor, and the next day it was 103. And she was actually lab confirmed, and I got infected a day later. And
yes.
I got tested a few days after that, and I was positive. So we were both lab confirmed, and then two other members of the family that were sharing the household got infected within a few days. So all four of us, it was four out of four, were infected with the virus, and we all had it. But that wasn't until October. We didn't have it when it started in September and school started. It took 6 weeks or so. And a lot of those kids in school that were coughing in September got infected again a couple, 6 weeks later. And they probably didn't even have that much immunity from the first infection. They didn't get that much virus. It was mild. They fought it off. They didn't really get a good immune response. And then they got infected again when the virus was probably at a higher viral load. I mean, the virus doesn't even have to change. All it has to do is be at a higher concentration. So if you get infected with a low concentration, you may be asymptomatic. You may have a little bit of a cough. You don't really get that sick. And you get rid of the virus. And then some people end up getting more of the virus and they infect somebody, but it starts out higher in those people, and then they get sicker and they're more likely to transmit it. So it's just a natural thing that the higher the virus is when it goes in initially, the greater chance that the person's going to get sicker. And when they infect somebody, they're going to infect that other person with a higher dose. And all of a sudden, the virus is going around, and there's enough of it going around. So you might get infected by two or three people if you're at a school, for instance, and it's starting to go around. So that almost by definition means you're going to get a higher dose. You're going to get, a dose one from one person and dose two from another one, dose three. And in one day, you might have tripled the amount of virus that you would have had you only been affected by one person. And then it just starts spreading that way because people get infected at a higher level, a higher quantity of virus, and they're more likely that they're going to get sicker before they get over the virus. And if they get sicker, they're more likely to go to the doctor, and the doctor's going to run the test, and they're going to come back and say, you've got swine flu. And by the fall, it was so high, it was so dominant they didn't even have to do the test that you had swine flu. If you had influenza A, you had swine flu because that was the only influenza A circulating by October of 2009. And in fact, they set up a test at the University of Pittsburgh so they could do in-house testing. And they were getting so many positives that they told the doctor, don't bother. If they've got flu-like symptoms, you can assume they've got swine flu instead of sending us the sample and waiting for the results, because they were getting 70% positives. And the 30% negatives were probably just bad collection. You know, they didn't swab
got
well.
It. All
and
right.
and they
right.
got a false negative. So,
okay. All right. Very good.
And anyway, yeah. Tomorrow I'll tell you, this story has got a lot more detail. There's the mail service. There's the people that are going and saying, send the kids back to school.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more going on than we got to today. But I'll go through
all
that
right.
tomorrow. And,
okay.
There's a lot
Make
of
a
activity.
List. Make a list, check
okay.
it twice. We'll get through it tomorrow night. Okay,
sounds
thanks,
good.
Henry.
Okay, talk to you then. Take care.
Okay. All right, and thanks, everyone, for being here. Gerald wrote, and we'll be on next Thursday, first hour next Thursday, and then Dr. Eric Carlstrom will be back as well. Okay, lots ahead. Back tomorrow night. Friday already. My goodness. Take care. Be safe. Be smart.